It was 2012, and we were scrambling to cover the stunning set of restrictions the Vatican had just imposed on Catholic women religious in this country. 6 years now have gone by, and in some ways the reasons the women religious were challenged in the first place, their focus on social and economic justice instead of just obsessing over abortion and LGBT matters, was a predictor of what Pope Francis, who was elected the following year, would focus on. But that's not to say things got easy. A new book based on this 6-year period, titled However Long the Night, Making Meaning in a Time of Crisis, the story of how an organization found an alternate contemplative way of working through impasse. So I am really happy to welcome one of the contributors, Sister Sharon Holland, to State of Belief Radio. Sister, welcome.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
For listeners who may not be familiar with what happened, would you just briefly summarize what it was that happened back in 2012, how it all began?
Well, of course, it began before 2012, but I will make an effort to be brief. In 2009, the presidents of the Leadership Conference of Women Religious were informed that the Vatican Office on Doctrine was going to conduct an assessment of our doctrinal stances. And then it was 3 years later when we received the results of that study of our doctrinal stances and so on in a document that was called Doctrinal Assessment and Mandate. And so The mandate set forth things that we needed to attend to.
Sister Allen, what was the immediate impact on the women religious among whom you were working at that time?
I think by and large, people were religious, as more and more found out about it, maybe shocked, hurt, angered, the range of emotions. I do need to say that this was geared to one conference of women religious and did not address the other group of religious. So it wasn't all of us, but it was most of us.
Yeah.
People were angry and sad and all of those things, feeling that it was not justified.
So the book focuses on resolving this seeming impasse in an alternate contemplative way. What does that mean?
Well, we needed ourselves some time to digest what had happened, even after it was resolved, to see more clearly what had happened and how it had happened. We had decided not to write a book that was a blow-by-blow of what went on, and we needed the time ourselves to examine our feelings and emotions and to look at the people involved. We had been working already as religious at becoming more contemplative. I would say that means listening with a quieter heart and mind, listening to the Spirit, trying to look honestly at what we were experiencing, what was happening, in lots of areas before this ever happened. And we definitely needed that deeper space of heart and listening to hear what the Spirit was saying to us and what was the right way to try to go forward in this. So the contemplative dimension preceding talking, acting, responding, reacting was extremely important. I remember one of the big meetings early on in this when I was so aware that the Holy Spirit was in this big ballroom where we were and that people had entered into quiet and were listening, and it was our decision then to go forward with integrity in seeing what was going to happen.
Sister Holland, I am assuming that being contemplative is not antithetical to also continuing with the kind of social conscience and social ministries you did.
Oh, no, it's not contrary to it. I think it's essential to it, to have a right conscience and a right action discerning in some of the awful situations that we have to deal with today mm-hmm. in our country, in our world, require the contemplative, and it's part of a movement into action.
Mm-hmm.
One of our sisters who's been in all sorts of protests against arms and mm-hmm. and militarism and so on and has spent time in jail is one of the most contemplative people I know.
Hmm.
That precedes the action.
How did this direction end up being the one that LCWR took? I mean, I'm sure there must have been disagreement as to how best to respond.
Well, there was, and that as a conference and as individual conferences and congregations and religious, we'd been working on learning how to enter into things in a more prayerful, contemplative way and not just reacting to things. Mm-hmm. So we'd been working on that, and you're right, there were all kinds of reactions. That's why that scene in the ballroom sticks in my mind, because there were 800 or 900 of us there who were deciding whether and how to go forward with this,
mm-hmm.
and various opinions, and people who wanted to just say forget it, and other people who wanted to say no, we need to follow through on this,
mm-hmm.
and the presence of the Spirit was palpable.
Hmm. Your chapter in the book is titled The Power of Secrecy and Perceptions. Please talk about that power, if you would.
One of the most important things to me that happened in the process of dealing with the bishop delegates and with the representatives of the office called Doctrine of the Faith was in a meeting late in the process when we'd made a lot of progress already in mutual respect and understanding. And one of the officials said he regretted that perceptions had become institutionalized.
Hmm.
And to me, that broke open an understanding of some of what was going on and of what could be a key to making progress in some of the things in our country that's divided and in our world that's divided.
Hmm.
Perceptions had become institutionalized. Opinions about us hadn't been reexamined since somebody gave that opinion way back sometime. So some of the things that we were accused of, if they'd ever been true, hadn't been true for years. And we were perceived as going too far with mm-hmm. Vatican II, not having sufficient respect for authority of the church, various things, and nobody had reexamined them lately. That's what it said to me.
Hmm.
And, you know, isn't that what's happening with some of our issues of racism, of people in general, of even the Koreas now, you know, all of the, there's so many places in the world that, how do we think about those people and what do we really know?
Because we're seeing an unprecedented level of polarization in our society right now, this is a book that this nation can learn from, don't you think?
I do. For people who want to go about solving things in a different way than just arguing back and forth and pointing out what's wrong with each other, I think it has a lot to offer. I have to say, in all honesty, even though we had different opinions on things, we were dealing with wonderful people
mm-hmm.
who really had the same deep values of love for the church and respect for religious life, who maybe didn't think we were doing it right, but were willing to listen to us and find out how we were going about things. So I think there's a wisdom in it that could help anyone who wants to go about things differently, but some things that are dividing our country and our world are much bigger than what divided us.
Right.
We had wonderful bishops to work with, and but yes, I mean, we have to build relationships. That's one of the things that we saw was happening as we met over the 3 years. We were building relationships and trust, and then we shared more, and then we respected each other more.
How can we reduce the impact specifically of secrecy and perceptions on the disagreements that we are enduring in our nation right now?
I don't know what we do with secrecy. You know, it gets cloaked as confidentiality, and sometimes that's essential. And sometimes it's just, like, in our case, we felt like we never knew really where this came from and how it got started. Mm-hmm. And in the end, in a way, that doesn't matter, but it leaves you suspicious, and then you make speculations. Mm-hmm. The working on relationships with people so that you can listen to each other helps break down perceptions. If a person is willing, if you get to know somebody, if you have a relationship with somebody, sometimes it's very small things. But I know I was teaching an international group of students part of the time, and after I came to know somebody from a certain country, I was more interested in that country. It wasn't just an anonymous thing anymore. So mm-hmm. That's a very small example, but I guess I go back to the willingness to listen and to build a relationship so that someone else is open. Mm-hmm. It's a little hard to pin down how it happens.
You know, I have already said during our discussion that I think the audience for this book should be much larger than one might think from its cover and its title. Tell us, for people who pick up this book, what do you want them most? What do you most want them to see and feel and think after they read this book?
I guess I would want them to believe that there's another way to go about resolving things than the contentious. I'm very conscious that we were dealing with people of faith, and I certainly think that makes a huge difference. I'm not saying which faith, but people of faith who believe that God travels with us. This thing, however long the night, is from an African proverb of some sort, and, you know, it continues. The day comes, the dawn comes. Mm-hmm. God is faithful to us throughout the whole night.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So having faith, really learning to listen to other people. I don't know how you make it happen in politics, but if people are changed inside, gradually, they can do something. You all with the Alliance, with the various organizations, every time another person is in this line of relationship building for the common good, we can move it forward another little bit.
Sister Sharon Holland is Vice President of the Servants of the Immaculate Heart of Mary Sisters in Monroe, Michigan. A canon lawyer, she has taught at Catholic University, spent 20 years in Rome, and holds a doctorate in canon law. Sister Sharon contributed to the new book, However Long the Night, Making Meaning in a Time of Crisis, the story of how an organization found an alternate contemplative way of working through impasse. Sister Sharon, I want to thank you so much for being a part of this book, for publishing the book, and also for being with us today on State of Belief Radio.
Thank you. It's been good to be with you.
Well, that's all the time we have for this week's show. If you've made a donation to State of Belief Radio this week, I want to say a sincere thank you. If you think there's value in the conversations we present and the voices we amplify in the midst of the gridlock our public rhetoric too often becomes, please make your contribution today. Find more information at stateofbelief.com. That's stateofbelief.com. Stay up to date by subscribing to the free weekly State of Belief podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast platform. And take a moment to follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Our producer is Ray Kirstein. State of Belief Radio is a production of Interfaith Alliance. Become a member today at interfaithalliance.org. And be sure to join us next week for more stories from the intersection of religion, government, and politics. Until then, you all take care of each other. I'm Welton Gaddy. That's State of Belief.
I think it's time we stop, children. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going on.